This past week was the Indiana primary. Ted Cruz's campaign had set into motion a plan, with the supposed help of the John Kasich campaign, to topple Donald Trump in Indiana, turn momentum around to Cruz's favor, prevent Trump from getting the 1,237 delegates needed for the GOP presidential nomination, and have all this result in a brokered GOP convention. First part of the plan didn't work out so well, which pretty much pulled the plug on parts B and C of that equation. Here, look back at this past week and ahead with what may come about in the presidential race is the politics editor for the Washington Examiner, author of the book Devouring Freedom, Can Big Government Ever Be Stopped? Say good morning, W. James Antle III. Good morning, Jim.
How you doing?
WashingtonExaminer.com is where you read Jim's work along with the other fine and most importantly factual journalists among the political world. And, well, I guess, for all the time that Indiana never really counted in the primary race, it certainly counted this past week, didn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it definitely is. Shaken out the entire field. I mean, now there's just one Republican standing. Donald Trump is the presumptive nominee. Indiana was decisive in that whole process.
When you look at some of the demographics, I mean, Cruz was banking. Indiana was supposed to be demographics in the bank as far as the evangelical voters, but it seems like state after state, primary after primary, it's almost sad to say, almost nobody likes Ted Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, when you really look at who voted for Ted Cruz during the primaries, what tells the tale is that he won the voters he was supposed to win sometimes. He won the states he was supposed to win sometimes. Donald Trump won the voters that were loyal to him and won the states he was supposed to win and needed to win most of the time, pretty consistently. And that's really the difference. And Indiana was a good example of that. The demographics of the state were, you know, not perfect for Cruz, but should have been favorable enough. There's a large evangelical presence, a practiced network of conservative Christians, like the one that he was able to beat Trump in Iowa with. They've been around the block a few times. They've been involved in these races before. So he should have had a pretty good ground game there, but it couldn't compete. You know, his organization, as good as it was, couldn't compete with Donald Trump's organic popularity and just big name and big numbers.
I should correct myself, too. Some people do love Ted Cruz. I thought back to his announcement of his suspending his campaign, which is a technical term of saying it's over, folks. And a lot of people cried out no, a good part of the crowd did. And I thought back to when Jeb Bush said the same thing after Super Tuesday. And no exaggeration, I think there was one voice that said no.
So, yeah, I mean, so Cruz got that for him. Definitely in a stronger position than Jeb Bush. He had a loyal following. You know, he was considered by a lot of Tea Party conservatives the only honest man in Washington. He got a lot of credit for leading on the Obamacare fight, while a lot of other Republicans thought he was grandstanding and promoting himself. But Donald Trump was able to beat him at his own Republican outsider game. You couldn't really get more outsider than Trump. And so you saw some polls late in the campaign that showed over 60% of Republican and Republican-leaning voters now viewed Cruz as an establishment candidate, which is a fascinating statistic, and I think it really speaks to why things fell apart at the end.
So James Antle, the third politics editor for Washington Examiner. His book is Devouring Freedom, Can Big Government Ever Be Stopped? WashingtonExaminer.com is the website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. How much damage had Cruz done to himself through the various missteps of, well, first of all, referring to a basketball hoop in Indiana as the basketball ring is just setting you up for late night fodder right there. And naming a vice presidential candidate, that too set off the line of jokes. Says, what's next? Is he going to announce the location of his presidential library? I mean, that sideline stuff just further just played into, the old trap that, you know, that you set for the bear, that the bear falls into the hole in the ground that Donald Trump seemed to just be successfully setting for all his opponents time after time after time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that any of that was what really turned the race, but it was pretty symbolic of where things were going. And it just seemed that no matter what Cruz tried to do to get himself out of this mess, he only got more deeply entangled in his political problems. And none of the maneuvers that he attempted really did anything. You know, the Kasich alliance clearly backfired. Carly Fiorina didn't have much of an impact. Trump was able to top all of that by trotting out a lot of Indiana coaching legends who were enthusiastic supporters. the Mike Pence endorsement was pretty tepid. So everything Cruz did to try to recreate the dynamics of Wisconsin, where he had his big win against Trump, simply failed. And with that, his path to the nomination, well, it really his path to stopping Trump from winning the nomination, evaporated.
How much damage has Cruz done to his political future versus Marco Rubio, who saw the writing on the wall a lot faster and got out a lot sooner?
Well, on the one hand, you know, Cruz has stayed in longer to take more punches, and some of the bruising from that is going to take a while to heal. And in the end, his rhetoric against Trump was even nastier than Rubio's. So the Trump-Cruz relationship, which was once cordial, is now pretty fractured, and that will also raise some questions about his sincerity, since he initially embraced Trump. But on the other hand, Cruz at least still has a Senate seat, and Rubio is going to have to find something to do for the next 3 or 4 years if he wants to run again, where he can make some money, but not be a lobbyist or something that would hurt him if he wanted to go back into presidential politics.
Well, let's look back at Donald Trump and his timeline of activities, and you can go back to, I mean, he's good friends with Vince McMahon, who owns and runs the World Wrestling Entertainment. Go back even further, Trump was associated with him, if you remember, the talk show host Morton Downey Jr., who was certainly a bomb thrower in front of the camera. And same thing with Vince McMahon and the pro wrestlers. How much did Trump, do you think, looking at Trump, learn from being in those environments and with those people, saying, okay, here's how you connect with an audience? But certainly that's not how he performs or how he behaves in the boardroom where he's negotiating with contractors or leaders of a country where he wants to plant a golf course or a hotel. Well, at least I hope not.
I think Trump definitely learned a lot about how to be an entertainer during all his years in television. And you can definitely see where at different points he's channeling Howard Stern, he's channeling Morton Downey Jr., in a way to appeal to the common man. But most of all, I think there is a lot of commonality when you've seen him on the wrestling broadcast with Vince McMahon sort of trash talking. I mean, he was using a lot of that trash talk early on in the debates against Jeb Bush, against little Marco Rubio, against Lion Ted. You know, a lot of these things that he was able to do to get cheers from a crowd at a wrestling match, he was able to do to get cheers from a crowd at a rally and even a presidential debate. So sort of like when people were competing against Ronald Reagan, who obviously was a very different figure, but was able to leverage some of his skills as a Hollywood actor to become a more effective politician, Trump used some of his star power to really make the rest of the Republican field look small.
Right, we're on time with W. James Antola, third politics editor for Washington Examiner. He's also author of Devouring Freedom, Can Big Government Ever Be Stopped? WashingtonExaminer.com. On the web, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. So what's the message being delivered to the doorstep of the GOP establishment today and those candidates for the House and the Senate? Who embraces, who walks back? And it's pretty much, I don't know, carved in stone, but they're looking for the hammer and chisel. The Koch brothers seem to be closing their wallets for this cycle.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a lot of Republican donors who are not going to be enthusiastic to give money to Trump. I mean, Trump was really hammering them for being special interests, for paying for access, made a lot of his pitch about being his own man and not being beholden to the donors. So, you know, a little bit of the payback will be, well, if you're not going to be beholden to us and you're going to make us out to be some kind of nefarious force in American politics, we're going to keep our wallets closed. And the Kochs in particular have a lot of philosophical disagreements with Donald Trump. So it's not surprising that they're not going to be very heavily engaged in his campaign. For congressional Republicans, it's a real dilemma because in many cases, their primary voters supported Donald Trump, but you have a lot of anti-Trump sentiment among swing voters. So, I mean, if you're a Mark Kirk running for re-election in blue Illinois, even though that's a state where Trump did very well in the Republican primary, you're going to be reluctant to embrace Trump. And might want to keep your distance from him. I thought it was instructive that Kelly Ayotte, who's running for re-election in New Hampshire, said that she would support Trump but wasn't endorsing him. So you're going to see a lot of these kinds of verbal gymnastics you know, as people try to square the circle of being seen as loyal to their party's nominee, while at the same time maybe not being associated with some of the Trump baggage that the Democrats are going to use to bring them down in November.
To be continued. If you thought the party was over the primaries, it's only just begun. He's the politics editor for the Washington Examiner, also author of Devouring Freedom, Can Big Government Ever Be Stopped? James Entel, thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks for having me.